This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will hear from Elliot Stonecipher, the well-versed pollster from Shreveport. He has some thoughts about Governor Jindal's sagging poll numbers and whether they are legitimate. Also, we're slated to talk with Collis Temple, the first African-American to play basketball at LSU, and his daughter Colleen. They went to the inaugural festivities last month in Washington, and Colleen Temple was on CNN at the age of 10 with Soledad O'Brien, and she met the president and the first lady. We'll talk with them about their visit to Washington. And Jean Armstrong, longtime head of the League of Women Voters in this area, she's out. There's been a schism. We'll find out what happened with Jean and the League after this timeout for news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Inkstershow at WRKF.org works online. We begin the week with the Temples, Collis and Colleen. Colleen is a fourth grader at the Lab School at LSU, and she is the daughter of Collis Temple, first African-American to play basketball at Louisiana State University, and of Judge Kelly Terrell Temple. Good morning, Colleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you're in the fourth grade at the Lab School. And last month was a big month. You went to Washington for the inaugural. And before we get to you and me and your dad, here's Colleen with none other than former guest on this show, Soledad O'Brien, who found Colleen in the crowd at the inaugural. And lo and behold, she ends up on CNN.
I want to introduce you to a young lady. Come over here. Hi.
Hi.
You've been standing out here for a little bit.
Yes, ma'am.
What's your name?
Colleen Temple.
So, Colleen, while I fix the earpiece in my ear, I want you to tell me a little bit about why you're here and why you wanted to come and watch the inauguration.
Well, my father, he set up, like, a private plane so that we could come see the president, because I was always telling him how I've always wanted to be the president and how I wanted to see an inauguration.
So your daddy sent a private plane. Well, I need to talk to your daddy for when I need a private plane sometimes. How old are you?
10.
What do you want to hear from the president today? You know, the inaugural speech, which he'll deliver, is considered incredibly important because it's going to frame the next 4 years of his term. What would you like to hear from the president as a 10-year-old girl?
Stop gun violence.
Stop gun violence is your message. It's so nice to meet you. What a pleasure to have you with us this morning. We appreciate it.
All right. Colleen Temple making her network debut on CNN. And now she is in our studios for our show with her dad, Collis Temple. And before we get back to Colleen, what's this about you having a private plane?
Well, Jim, you know, I bump around a little bit. I'm not an elected official, so I have an occasion to have some pretty close private friends, and Mr. Jim Bernhardt, who's a good friend of mine, gave us an opportunity for my family and I to share a little time with him and go up on inauguration day and a couple of days before inauguration, and we had a pretty good time.
Sounds like it. So you're standing in the crowd on January 21st, which was, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And then, lo and behold, Soledad O'Brien puts a microphone in your daughter's face. That was quite an experience, wasn't it, Colleen?
Yes, sir. It was very exciting.
You didn't seem the least bit nervous.
I was really nervous, actually.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Are you nervous today?
Yes.
Okay. And then, I'm looking at these photographs. You know, most people go to the inaugural festivities if they go, and they come back with these long shots of the president. And we've got up-and-close photos of Colleen with Soledad and Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and the president and the first lady. You had quite a trip.
Yes, sir. It was exhilarating and an amazing experience.
What happened when you met the first lady?
She put her hands on my face and she asked me how old I was, where I went to school, and where I lived. And she said, "You're very beautiful," and she kissed me on the cheek.
And what happened when you met the president?
He reached out to give me a handshake, and I just put my arm around his neck and gave him a big hug.
Yeah, and how did he react?
He smiled.
Were you impressed with him?
Yes, sir.
He's not nearly as tall as your dad.
Not really.
But he's a big man in the world, the biggest man in the world. You said in your interview with Soledad, Colleen, that you'd like to see the president address gun violence. What would you like to see him do?
To make a high tax on guns so that it would be harder for people to get them, and to make sure that schools are very secure so that no other children can get hurt.
Sounds like you might have a future in politics.
Yes, sir.
You would like that?
Yes, sir.
What would you like to do?
First, I would like to run for mayor and maybe governor.
Mayor, governor? Don't stop there.
And then I really want to be the president of the United States.
You heard it here first. Now, 30 or 40 years from now, we'll be going back in the archives, or somebody will, after you and I are gone, and your daughter will possibly be the first African-American female president of the United States.
Well, Jim, you know, we've come a long way in our lifetime. For me to sit here and listen to her talk about that and to have a keen appreciation for my life and how things went when I was 10 years old, and guys used to tell me, you can be anything you want to be, and I knew that there was this huge, very thick glass ceiling. And for my daughter and for Kelly and I to be able to have that experience to go out and bring her to Washington and for her to see firsthand and for us all to experience this gentleman and his wife being the first lady and the president of this country, it's just a wonderful thing for both of us, and hopefully she'll continue to move forward and strive to be the best person she can be, number one, but at the same time accomplish the goal of being whatever she wants to be.
Are you into athletics?
Yes, sir. I play basketball with my dad.
She's a tall 10-year-old. How tall are you?
5'3".
That's pretty tall for a 10-year-old. Yeah,
it's pretty tall in fourth grade.
Taller than I was when I was 12.
Sure.
But I don't think she's going to be 6'9".
No, she won't be 6'9". She probably will get to...
The doctor said that I would be 6'4".
6'4"? Well, how tall were you when you were 2? You're supposed to double that.
Were you
3'1" or 3'2"?
I don't really know. Her mother probably would know. Yeah. But I don't know.
Well, at 6'4", she would be a commanding presence on the political stage. Would you encourage one of your children to go into politics? You've got some others who are prospects as well.
Well, we have 3 sons, and one of them is playing in the NBA, and one of them works with me every day in construction industry, and the other one flirts with the idea of politics, Collis the third. I think the real politician may be their little sister, Colleen.
And there's a little bit of a gap between the boys and the girl.
That's true, a pretty good gap. But she's right on target.
Now, you were like 50 years old when she was born, right?
I was 50 years old when she was born.
How was that experience?
It was a tremendous experience, a great experience, having had 3 sons for such a while. And to have a daughter come along, it was exciting. I had 5 sisters older than me, so I've been around girls quite a bit, but I never had to be involved in rearing a girl. And she's a little different than those 3 guys.
If I remember right, one of your sisters is named Colleen.
My oldest sister is Colleen. I have 5, and my oldest one is Colleen, and Kelly, my wife, made the decision to name Colleen Noel because it was right around Christmas that she was born. So
it's a beautiful photo here of Collis and Judge Temple, his wife, and Colleen with Nancy Pelosi. And of the 4 people in the photograph, there's no doubt who's dominating this photograph. It's the fourth grader here.
That's correct.
She knows how to
She's pushed out front. That's right.
How was Speaker Pelosi?
She was really nice, and I'm happy for her that she's the speaker, and I wonder what goes on in the House.
Did you go to any balls?
Yes, I went to the inaugural ball right after the inaugural parade.
And how was that experience?
It was really fun. I got to see Smokey Robinson, and I think it was
Smokey Robinson.
Yes, and I saw the president and the first lady dance together. It was really.
They dance well, don't they?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and look at that dress. What color is that, Colleen, that she's wearing for the inaugural festivities?
Fuchsia or magenta?
Fuchsia or magenta. I don't. That's Colleen and her mama.
Judge Temple doesn't look bad either.
Yeah, she's all dressed up pretty
attractive,
well.
Attractive family.
They tried to get me to take my hat off at the deal, but I'm a hat cap guy, so.
Why is
my
that?
My head was cold. My head's cold. It was 20 degrees outside, man. I had to have something to cover up this knot.
Well, you had a great career at LSU. Started in 1970. When you arrived at LSU, there were fewer than 100 African-American students on campus. I'm sure that in many ways your dreams have been exceeded by what has happened with you and your family.
I'm really blessed to be able to experience these different activities and be involved in community activities. Baton Rouge has been a tremendous place for me and my family. We really appreciate all the things that have happened. And LSU was a wonderful experience. It was challenging and trying sometimes, but to reap these benefits and have the fruit of your work and labor and be able to see it come to fruition is really a special time.
Your son Garrett is playing in the NBA. He became LSU's all-time leader in minutes played. That's a record that is substantial and one that is not talked about, but I'm sure you're very proud of Garrett.
Really proud of Garrett. I was with Garrett. We were with Garrett last night. There was this all-star break, mm-hmm. and so the NBA guys all either get to go to the all-star situation in Houston and hang out, and Garrett chose to come home because he has a godchild. My oldest boy had his little girl, second little girl, so Garrett came home to be with his godchild and spend time with his family, and he's flying out this morning to go back to start practice. He's had to come up on the rough side of the mountain. He's been starting for the last 15 or 16 games, and he's been getting some good minutes, good playing time, and playing pretty well.
For the Washington Wizards.
That's correct.
The last stop for Michael Jordan, who turned 50 yesterday.
Greatest guy that ever played the game, Michael Jordan.
You think he was greater than Wilt Chamberlain?
Greater than Wilt Chamberlain. Great. Wilt Chamberlain was the greatest force mm-hmm. for the time that ever played the game. But the guy that impacted the game the most and is a world-renowned, world-known guy is Michael Jordan. He set the NBA. He put the NBA on a rocket that went around the world, and everybody knew who Michael Jordan was.
Well, he may have been the greatest basketball player of all time. AP, Associated Press, named him the greatest athlete of the 20th century. He turned 50 yesterday. On the same day, Jim Brown turned 77, and he was named the greatest football player of the 20th century. So there must be something about February 17th.
Special time, I guess.
And if you take their years of birth, 63 and 36, and you juxtapose them, you got a 3 and a 6. So
it's amazing.
But Wilt Chamberlain, nobody was better than Wilt. And you know how many minutes he averaged over his career per game in the NBA? How many do you think?
He probably averaged 46 minutes a game.
That's exactly right. 46 minutes.
Out of 48.
Imagine being the backup to Wilt Chamberlain. You only
play two minutes. You average two minutes over a career.
2 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Well, Colleen, it's very nice to see you again.
Nice to meet you, too.
Well, and look forward to a career in politics, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Colleen Temple down the line. But thank you for sharing your inaugural story with us today.
You're quite welcome.
And thank you, Collis.
Thank you very much.
You've done well.
Welcome. Thank you.
We'll be back with Elliot Stonecipher, the occasionally outspoken pollster on Governor Jindal's sagging poll numbers after this timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is the local number, and outside the area, 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. We're visiting with pollster Elliot Stonecipher, and this is the first visit we've had with him in the new year, and it's the first since Governor Jindal's poll numbers have been produced in two different surveys showing the governor losing some ground, a lot of ground, if these polls are accurate. Here's Governor Jindal responding last week to a question about the poll from Public Policy showing him at 37% approval in Louisiana and 57% disapproval.
Look, the only polls I care about are BCS polls. I'm glad to see the Tigers are ranked again high for the preseason polls. I've never been a politician or a governor that's worried about polls. That's not what we worry about. What we're focused on is the future of Louisiana. I'm more worried about that.
All right. Elliot Stonecipher, what do you think? Is the governor, do you think he's not worried about this?
Good morning, Jim. Yes, he's worried about this. And I think anyone who really does keep up with kind of the details, if you will, of how Governor Jindal has structured his staff, how he's conducted his business, it's very clear that they are extraordinarily sensitive to anything and everything that allows them to control the message. And as you well know, in political terms, there is nothing more difficult to control in terms of message than really bad poll numbers. So I wasn't surprised by his response, and I think there will be much more polling data that we'll see relatively soon from his side to try to erase some of the sting of this, particularly because he's heading into a really, really difficult legislative session.
This poll showed him at 37% approval, 57% disapproval. Surveyed 603 Louisiana voters between February 8th and February 12th using automated phone calls. It is a Democratic firm. Is this the proverbial push poll, or do you think it was a legitimate survey?
No, I think it's legitimate in that the questions asked were the standard ones for determining any elected official's approval ratings. It bothers me that the sample was only 600 statewide. That has become normal, by the way. So the fact that it bothers me doesn't mean a whole lot. It's just that we have, by rule of thumb around here for decades, never done fewer than 1,200 samples statewide. But still, the margin of error is less than 5%. Public Policy Polling is out of North Carolina. They are definitely a Democrat Party pollster. But they are also cited, and I pay more attention to this, of course, more than most people, but they were cited for their extraordinary accuracy in the presidential campaign this past one, including in battleground states, not just the national polling. And, as you've already referenced, there was, within a three-week period, an earlier poll by a company much more identified on the Republican side. It also caught the governor dropping below 50% approval, although, obviously, it did not drop as low in that poll as 37.
He was at 46.
I think there's certainly cause for pause in the PPP numbers, but I think it's the corroboration makes it clear that this is a first-ever event for the governor in terms of a negative approval rating.
He has met, the governor, twice with local media now since this poll. Is this going to prompt a change in procedure for him as far as being available to Louisiana types who carry microphones and notepads?
You know, Jim, I commented on that in the piece that I wrote because I believe that it will. I believe that other things were at work probably in the media availability that happened from which you took your clip, and I believe that was last Friday. But I think the thing that is at the heart of all of this is that the governor and his team simply diss the local media, the in-state media, in favor of the national media, and they have done so very aggressively, and I'm being as polite as I can, ever since they came into office. For those who haven't watched this for as long as you and I have, there may be nothing remarkable about the fact that the governor simply doesn't believe that the people of Louisiana have a right via the media to know what's going on. They comfortably stiff the media, and that's the spirit with which they do that, I think, is very akin to the degree to which they have used deliberative process and other hedges that they put in the law to prevent them from having to release information from executive branch agencies. There is a real anti-good government strain that dominates what comes from the Jindal administration, whether it's public policy side or political. When a governor sees those numbers, or a U.S. senator, or, quite frankly, some members of Congress, much less a president, when those numbers drop below 50%, whether it's in the trial heat or approval numbers, that is a very, very certain and distinct sign that you have to change what you're doing. You've got to do something differently. We'd like to believe that these two local availabilities that followed these numbers are going to, at least for some period of time, change the way the governor chooses to let the people know what's going on. Time will tell, because I'm convinced that that is not, of course, their spirit, not at all.
If it's not working, though, if these poll numbers are accurate, and you've got to believe that at the very least the governor's popularity has waned considerably, if it's not working and he can't get his legislative agenda endorsed by two-thirds of the House and Senate, then you would think there might be a change.
Yes, and that, again, is, I think it's very interesting that in the inside baseball piece of this is that people at this level of public office have around them such tight, tight control that they really don't have to, when they're very popular, as the governor has been, they just don't have to find out what the people are thinking. They don't have to care. And no one in history in Louisiana has been to the degree that Bobby Jindal has in that context. So with that team, it's going to be doubly difficult, exponentially difficult, to accomplish the change that you described. It is necessary if he continues to believe that legislative successes in Louisiana on major public policy initiatives are the stuff, basically, of what he needs to show the nation to be president someday. That calculus for anyone but Bobby Jindal in any state but Louisiana would have been dramatically changed the moment these PPP numbers hit the public airwaves. I mean, this is a game changer anywhere else. We have to acknowledge here that we have a very, very unusual situation, whether for us or compared to other states. We have, in essence, only executive branch public policy formulation and politics. The legislature has belonged to Bobby Jindal. Either these numbers, as they certainly would anywhere else, are going to show legislators that they don't have to be so embarrassingly lockstep with the governor, in which case he's up for a really tough session. Or we're going to find out that whatever all these mechanisms are that he and his team use to control legislators are simply so strong that even his unpopularity is not going to unlock a true balance of powers, a legislative branch that exists as America was set up for it to exist. We don't have balance of power in Louisiana. We have an executive branch that utterly controls the legislative branch, and these numbers should shake that loose.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Elliot Stonecipher, the pollster and demographer based in Shreveport. He's handled campaigns for over 30 years, and he has followed a few governors and their ups and downs in polls. Have you ever seen a governor who was as up as this governor come down as far as this poll? That's a pretty big gap between the apex of his popularity and where this survey finds him now.
Jim, that's an excellent point. And no, in answer to your question, I've never seen that. And that's why I think everybody's tendency, everybody who pays close attention knows how to drill down in poll numbers or anything of the like. We look at the 37% approval in the PPP poll and just are startled. So your first instinct should be to question those numbers. By the way, I didn't mention it earlier. I also didn't like the fact that their poll was run during Mardi Gras. I cannot name exactly what difference that makes, and frankly, I could argue the other side. But the point is, the first reaction should be, do those numbers make sense? And I would say, methodologically, they do make sense. The application of the margin of error, et cetera, means that he is in very, very deep political trouble if it has really gone as low as 37. And in that context, the poll commissioned by the Louisiana Medical Society some 3 weeks earlier did not show anywhere near that dramatic a drop, but it certainly was below 50%, always a danger sign. And it sounds as though, it reads as though, between the two polls, that there is a deeply descending trend line in Governor Jindal's approval. We will not know that until we see a couple of three more polls, certainly throughout the period of the legislative session. So by midsummer, we're going to know whether the governor really took a huge hit or whether these numbers are simply not as they are not indicative of where things exactly stand. And I would add, I do think it's interesting that when you look at all the interest groups that the governor's major public policy initiatives have most affected, and there are so many of them, it is entirely possible that he has become this unpopular this quickly. If the rate of decline is that fast, though, Jim, you still have to put in the caveat that maybe it's something that was disproportionately negative for the governor at a short period of time, and health care could be that, by the way, or public education. And therefore, he's going to bounce out relatively quickly, too, that the rate of decline would be matched somewhat by a like recovery. So there are a lot of things to pay attention to, but by midsummer, we'll know a lot more than we know now.
Well, the poll numbers were not greeted with much enthusiasm nationally. In fact, there are several media outlets who noted that the governor, who, of course, is trying to become president of the United States, is now fighting a big battle at home as far as his popularity. This one from MSNBC, take it for what it is. It's coming from a network that has veered far left. But Governor Jindal, it says, just last year he was on the short list of potential Republican contenders for vice president. But the latest public policy poll shows that Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal is now one of the most unpopular governors in the country. And it says Jindal's disapproval seems to cross party lines. Among the GOP, only 59% approve of his job performance, recently compared to 81% who gave him a positive approval rating from the same polling firm in August of 2010. Elliot, do you really believe only 59% of Republicans are in the governor's camp right now?
You know, ironically enough, I'd have to say yes. I think that's entirely possible. And you may be hearing the same anecdotal evidence that I am of that from leaders within his own party. The fact of the matter is that the governor, there's a combination of effects, I believe, that are at issue here. Number one is the public policy side, and by the way, that's why the national commentators are now going to be so rough on Bobby Jindal relative to the past. His notion of swapping corporate income tax, that is, moving them out, putting sales tax increases in, that is broadly perceived, certainly nationally, as a very, very regressive kind of tax change that is going to disproportionately hurt those of middle to lower income. That's not something that anybody's proven in this case, of course, because the governor hasn't let us see what the plan really is. But in any case, there is, I think I'll just change and say it this way, there is every chance that within his party, enough Republicans in Louisiana have been or will be hurt by several of his major public policy initiatives over the last 12 months that even they are now saying, sure, we'll be glad when we have a new governor. And if that is, if we saw in the PPP poll that inflection point is now behind us and that he took this turn sometime between these polls and the last ones we knew about, then this is a date and a time that we'll all remember well. We'll know exactly when we first saw evidence of it.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on the air with Elliot Stonecipher. Hello, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Jim. Yes, sir. I would say that Mr. Jindal's special interest that he serves the best is the Republican Party. I mean, he's going to turn down billions of dollars in Medicare. I think 400,000 uninsured people in Louisiana will suffer for that because of the way he follows his ideology. It's pretty plain to see what his choices are and where his interests lie. He puts his party before the good of the state. And
would you respond, Elliot?
I think that's absolutely true. I will say this. I think the new part of that discussion that we might all want to start paying a little extra attention to is this so-called red state model. Now, I don't know if the red state model is a phrase that was actually coined by the Wall Street Journal, but it was first explained by the Wall Street Journal, and the shorthand version is, within the Republican Party, two groups. One group in the so-called red state model acknowledges and represents and personifies that while Republicans are having trouble getting control of the Senate or the White House, they control 30 of the governorships, and they have majorities in 27 of the state legislatures, and five more states, it's split. So I think Bobby Jindal is in the Republican Governors Association side of the party. He is its chair. They are opposed, generally, to the establishment Republicans, now Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, and increasingly, and ironically, Marco Rubio. So, yes, he is a Republican. He serves their agenda. But I think it's also important that establishment Republicans are now pushing back against Bobby Jindal. They are the ones to whom he was referring when he called the party stupid. So I think he's much more difficult to analyze now since those speeches, a couple of them back-to-back in just a few days last month, were made.
Will you be doing any surveys?
I'm not going to do any surveys let me qualify that. I have no plans to do any surveys on this subject whatsoever. Quite frankly, they get in my way now, and as I mentioned in the piece I sent out, there's a lot of manipulation that goes on here, and I'm not a pollster who is available to do polling and then say that I didn't do it for the governor when it was only the governor's people who paid me. There's a lot of that goes on. I've never done that, and there's more of it now than ever.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. We will return with Elliot Stonecipher for a few more moments and then hear from Jean Armstrong, the erstwhile president of the League of Women Voters. She has a new group that she will talk about, and we'll find out what happened with Jean and the League when we return as well. After this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Elliot Stonecipher, pollster and demographer from Shreveport, commenting on the survey numbers for Governor Jindal. The latest poll from Public Policy finds the governor at 37%. Paul Annopoulos. Paul, good morning. You're on with Elliot.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, and welcome from the big city of Annopoulos. Just a question on the governor's plans for the tax renewal and the tax reassigning of debt. You know, the legislator in the House and Senate run, has to have a bull on this. Do you think that the House and the Senate will pass it with overwhelming change or just throw it out? Thank you.
Elliot?
Jim, was the question in the context of the tax swap?
Yes. Will it pass?
Right. I will tell you this. Two answers. First of all, it's going to be a lot more difficult given these poll numbers unless the legislature is, as I said, just so socked away with the governor that we're never going to see a distance between them. But most importantly, the second answer, the governor knows the content of his plan. We'll hear much, much more as his budget comes out in just shortly. But until we see those details, I know of no one who wants to call whether or not they believe that tax swap can go through.
Treasurer Kennedy was on this program a few weeks back, and he said that, his opinion as a lawyer is that this plan would have to go to a vote of the people to be constitutionally protected and actually become the law of the state. What do you think about that prospect?
I know it's a great argument, and that a lot of people who are very smart and who are attorneys, you know, have very, very different feelings about this than I do. I've always believed that to make such changes in the tax structure would require a constitutional convention to be done, what I believe would be properly, or certainly a constitutional amendment. I think that's very important. I agree with, of course, the treasurer. And I think it's also important that we recognize that if you go above 10% on the sales tax side, in addition to issues of constitutionality, we're going to upset many, many apple carts that are going to stay upset for years to come. I think it's a great example of why tax structure broadly should be dealt with in constitutional conventions.
I'll pass along a few questions from listeners. Katie says the governor spent 86 days out of the state last year, as reported in yesterday's Advocate by Michelle Milholland, has not yet visited the sinkhole in Assumption Parish. Is there a disconnect between those two actions?
There is definitely a disconnect. It's one of the most remarkable things I've seen in my life or studied in Louisiana political history. This is a governor who decided from the beginning, and we saw it very early, that he simply does not believe that any of those kinds of conflicts, and there's a huge conflict between just traveling or taking care of business here, he's never worried about that. And his poll numbers have absolutely kept air in that balloon. I think that's why these numbers could be so important.
All right. Nanette, noting that you were a critic of the 2010 census, notes that in Louisiana, unlike other states, we have a huge number of tourists who are in the state at any given time, particularly in the New Orleans area, which would obviously shove our population above 5 or 6 million on any given day. Should we count tourists as residents of states?
And I would say, of course, the answer is no for two reasons. And by the way, I'm not convinced that we don't count tourists. Although the opportunity to do so is rare, we found out that methodologically there are ways that could happen. But I think two things. Number one, those are people who either live in the continental, well, they live in the United States, one of the other 49 states, and therefore need to be counted there, or they are foreign and obviously cannot, even by the Census Bureau's definition of citizenship, be considered a citizen or a resident of America. So, no, I certainly don't think they should be counted.
But it's not a ridiculous question. It's one that has been offered in other places.
Oh, Jim, I have learned, and I thank this person for the question. It is anything but laughable or a joke or impossible. If people really knew how the census numbers came about, they would not be happy. All things are possible.
Well, Elliot Stonecipher, good to visit with you, and let's talk again soon. It should be an
Thank
interesting
you very
year.
Much, Jim.
My
Anytime.
Pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye. And we're joined in studio now by Jean Armstrong, former head of the League of Women Voters, now president of the Leaders with Vision. Good morning to you, Jean.
Good morning.
Armstrong. How many years were you with the League?
18 years.
18 years, and there's been a schism. What happened?
Well, Jim, actually, I'd like to follow up on Stonecipher's comments first over tax reform.
Now, you chide people all the time for dodging questions. I just asked you a question about what happened with the League,
okay,
and you're dodging me.
I will answer the question very simply. We were sent a letter that restricted our activities to the point that we could not sustain the Lunch with the League program, and we could not handle any of the multi-parish or state candidate forums, even though the state league did not have the capability nor the willingness to do that. And this was being selectively applied, and our membership decided, since they put a value on these things, that we needed this for our citizens, they decided, since we could not do it, and we have a detailed page on the website explaining what the League can do and what Leaders with Vision can do.
So Gene and the league have split the sheets, and it is now Leaders with Vision.
And it's a nonpartisan political organization that is without borders. We can take on anything.
I would think so. Who are the Leaders with Vision? Gene, John Armstrong, and who else?
Well, what we're looking at, it's not us. We're just the organizers.
Right.
The leaders are like we're having this Thursday. This is what we're referring to when we say have lunch with the leaders. We are the coordinators, the catalyst of community dialogue and catalyst to bring about action. Okay, and for example, this following up on Elliot, we were talking about tax reform, and that is we're starting a new series. It is called Lunch with the Leaders. Okay, and we started a series of perspectives. The first one is on Thursday at Drusilla. The doors will open at 11:15, and the February's perspective is Louisiana tax reform, and the leaders are Jason DeQueer, Louisiana Department of Revenue and Taxation, who just called me last night and said he would be participating.
Very good.
John Bell Edwards, these are on alphabetical order. House of Representatives, John Moeller, the Budget Project, Jim Richardson, LSU economist, and Joel Robideau, chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. And we're particularly appreciative of having Joel there, because he's a CPA and he has to drive in from Lafayette. And if any of y'all know your accountants, they just appear groundhogs on the 1st of January and don't come up till April.
Well, this is Thursday at Drusilla, and if you'd like more information, you can call 927-2255. That's the Vision Office. Where is the Vision Office?
The Vision Office, 728 North Boulevard.
Okay, all right. And Jean Armstrong is the president, and she was with the league for 18 years, and the league during that time often was in charge of events of this sort. And this is, you've got a good crew. So Thursday should be an interesting day with the Leaders with Vision. Now, you follow the news, and occasionally, this is one of the comments that people have made, that Jean inserts her opinions. What's your thought or thinking about the governor's tax proposal?
I haven't heard all of the perspectives yet, and before I speak, I need to be able to cast an informed decision. And so that's why I, too, am going to be at this, so I can learn about it, because there's too much floating around. I said Jason called me last night and said he was coming, and I was absolutely thrilled because I understood last week the governor made some comments that made us think that maybe he was changing his mind about something.
But Jason DeQueer, who's been on this program, will be there, and Wednesday we are slated to have Tim Barfield, the man who runs the Department of Revenue, on this program. So we should hear more about the governor's tax plan. There are some items on there that are hard to argue with. Doing away with the income tax, that sounds good, doesn't it?
It depends on if you go to a sales tax. Sales tax is very regressive because any one family can only purchase so much food. That is discounted, if it remains discounted, and it puts a disproportionate percentage of taxation on people who are middle class and below the poverty line.
What about raising tobacco taxes?
I have no problem with that.
A dollar?
I have no problem with that.
Okay. As I've stated,
at the time that I smoked, and I smoked heavily at one point, I went from, 35, 40 cents a pack? To $2 plus dollars. So, no, I gave it up, not because of what it cost, but because of a threat to my husband's health. And, no, that's a luxury. Smoking is a luxury.
Well, the state tax is $4 behind the tax in New York State, $4.
Mm-hmm.
Should we go up that high?
That would be a... That would be something for the legislature to look at. I personally would favor a very comprehensive review of all taxation policies in this state in a constitutional format, constitutional commission format, in as much as we seem to be giving away, and I'm speaking as an economic developer, let me say that I don't think we're getting the number of jobs and the benefits from the 10-year tax exemption. I think everybody should pay school board taxes industry and people scream wildly about our public school education, but you have to pay the taxes before you can gripe. And there's a lot of folks out there not paying the taxes to our school boards. So we need to do something in that manner, and I think we need a comprehensive look, not piecemeal and patch work.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation with Jean Armstrong, now president of Leaders with Vision, formerly the president of the League of Women Voters in this area. I can see you're a bit perplexed by the schism.
Well, I am, because I really, really love the League of Women Voters. But what I love more, quite frankly, are the people of the state of Louisiana and of Greater Baton Rouge. The citizens mean more to me than a structure. And so when the structure prohibited us from being able to serve the people of this state, and since I left being president of the state league, we've only had one person, one guy, the guy that came in right behind me, that went to the legislature. Since then, we have had an absence, and that's unspeakable, not to be representing the people of this state at the legislature during these crisis times. This was very, very hard. The board looked at it for over a year. What were our choices? What could we do? But when we couldn't even do multi-parish candidate forums, such as the Supreme Court race last year, there was a lot of education that came out of that. My Lord, we got two pages, you know, one page for each time in The Advocate. A lot of information got out that the public wouldn't have had, and this was going to be cut off. That just wasn't right for the citizens of our city and state.
There were some memorable moments during the years at these events, weren't there?
Yes, there were. We have, I have to say that God has a way of putting you in the right place at the right time. And for all of the challenges, can honestly say that the Satellite Voting Act, although we had to fight terribly hard for it, was my shining moment.
Some embarrassing moments, too. I recall a debate once where one of the panelists didn't show.
Yes, we do remember that. That was the guy that was running on ethics and transparency. And we had such an exciting panel chosen because we went to the collegiate leadership throughout the state. And this had never been done in the United States. And our future leaders were going to have a chance to question the gubernatorial candidates. But Mr. Jindal didn't show up.
Mr. Jindal, here's a question from Alex wanting to know if you've ever had a forum with either Senator Landrieu or Senator Vitter.
I've had forums with both.
And you've gotten to Vitter recently since the scandal?
No, I haven't. The last time that he agreed to do one of our forums was when he ran the first time.
2004.
And that was in Shreveport.
2004, okay. Yeah. But Gene had...
We did it statewide.
Gene has been at the forefront of issues of importance in our state for some time, was my next-door neighbor for 16 years, even named her dog Senator.
Yes.
Senator was quite lively, as I recall, like some other senators we know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more lively than Senators Landrieu and Vitter, if you can
believe
Much that.
More lively. He reported on everything in the neighborhood.
Including his next-door neighbor, right?
Right. But, Jim, there's so many fond memories, and I still believe in the basic structure. I've never seen a finer structure than the league. But until you can fully fill all the capacities of each level, then you have to free up the locals to do what they need to do. And when you can't, that's when people have to make a choice. And we invite everybody to join Leaders with Vision.
And you've been meeting at Drusilla Seafood right down the street from where you live.
Yes.
for some time. That's convenient for you. It's walking distance for Gene Armstrong.
Well, they had there was the place that we were having it. We used to have it at Serap's, and then all capability there closed. We bounced around a little bit, and we tried to stay mid-city. But we ended up going to Drusilla because it was a straight shot from downtown and every place else in town.
So what's going to happen with the league now?
The league will continue to go on. I said some of the things that they will be doing. Hold on just a second. I happen to have that comparison sheet, which you can also find up on the website, Leaders with Vision, org. Some of the things they'll be taking care of is voter registration drives, local candidate forums every 4 years, local issue forums when appropriate. They will advocate local issues before local government. They'll do community projects in East Baton Rouge Parish, and hopefully they'll continue on with Observer Corps voluntary opportunities at Metro Council, Planning Commission, right, School Board, et cetera. But more than that.
We got to go. But thank you, Jean Armstrong. For more information about her event this Thursday, Leaders with Vision, 927-2255. Until tomorrow, happy President's Day, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.